بسم الله الحمد لله السلام عليكم. That is the greeting of peace and we wish it upon you. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Dean Show Radio Show. And today we're going to be discussing family planning, where some people went wrong and how you can go right. We love our brothers and sisters in faith and our brothers and sisters in humanity who we want to be our brothers and sisters in faith. So we want to give some advice. This is for everybody. Everyone can benefit from the advice that we're going to be getting from not the car mechanic or the ice cream man, not Bob the Butcher, but Dr. Bilal Phillips. Sheikh, are you there?
I am. And glad to be back with you again.
I love working with you. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmah.
We are going to be talking about family planning. Some people are thinking about having a family. Some people have a family and the kids are young. And some individuals have gotten far beyond that point. Some of their kids are already out in college, finished college. So we're going to take an individual's life and kind of dissect it so everyone can benefit. This person will be a doctor who's been implementing Islam, that complete submission to the will of the one who created us, the creator of Abraham, Jesus Christ, Noah, the sun, the moon. In Aramaic, Jesus called this creator Allah. We call him in Arabic Allah. So this is the creator we're talking about. And this doctor from Hungary or from Poland or from Europe, he's been implementing Islam for a long time, since he was a teen. His parents did also. But he came over to the States and he had a family, but now somewhere something went wrong. And we pray to the creator of the heavens and earth that he protects us and helps this individual, whoever it is who's having a hard time, and protects us from having a hard time. Now, the children, the girl has gone off to college and she's kind of blended in with pop culture. She's dating now. She's got a boyfriend. Two consenting adults. The older brother, he didn't go off to college, but he joined a gang. That's another type of family. But there is another son that's coming up. He's not of that age yet, and there might still be some hope for everybody. But we want to see, how could an individual who's been praying five times a day, but somehow the children went astray? Where do we begin, Sheikh?
Well, we should begin from the idea that, as you said, planning, you know, is a necessity in our worldly affairs. We all recognize it. And we know, as they say, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Yes.
So,
yes.
This works in the business world, you know, day-to-day world. And of course, the family is no different. The family is family business. That one should plan out properly. One should be aware of what one's getting into, what the issues are, etc. And if one is just bumbling into it, you know, well, we just got married and, you know, we'll just play things by ear. You know, as they come, you deal with it. You find out later on, well, I shouldn't have done that. And you find out, you know, later on, well, yes, I should have done that. And so on and so forth. You bumble through. Then what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of what they call collateral damage out there. And that's what's happening to many families.
Collateral damage.
Yeah. And so we, when we have to go back and look at this situation, it's good to look at it right from the very beginning. You know, how that individual, because you have a man, a woman, and children. Okay, how did that individual get together in the first place in terms of husband and wife? You know, oftentimes you find situations where the husband, he's practicing and the wife isn't. Yes, or the wife is really practicing and the husband isn't. You see? So when you start off like that, you know, this is what they call, this is the time bomb, you know, just waiting to blow.
Wow, time bomb.
It's a time bomb. Because, you know, it's not going to work. It's going to be such a struggle. You know, there are going to be a lot of people hurt in the process, Islamically, spiritually. And there's going to be a lot of spiritual damage there. Because, you know, as the Prophet ﷺ told us, that we should choose our spouses based on the deen. So it means that the woman who's practicing should be marrying a man who's practicing. So this is the beginning point, because this is where the family starts from. So if you're starting off with one who's practicing and the other one isn't, you know, that was the wrong choice. That was a bad choice.
So it's not good enough to just have the label Muslim. It has to be followed up by action?
Definitely. You know, because it should be action which is evident in the character of the people. You know, not just, okay, they pray five times a day, but no, that they are good Muslims. You know, that's what you should seek for your children when we're looking to the future. You know, we want our sons, our daughters to marry good practicing Muslims.
What's a good Muslim? What is a good Muslim? Please define a good Muslim.
A good Muslim is one who does all of their basic Islamic requirements from the heart. They're not doing it as rituals which have been prescribed for them by their elders and forced on them, so they just do it because it's part of our culture. No, they're doing it from the heart. So they pray five times a day, not because people force them, so they might, you know, pray all five prayers at the night before they go to bed at night and, you know, things like this, which are just not permissible. No, they pray them, and they pray them on time. And, you know, they have an internal clock which tells them, hey, it's time for prayer. You know, they find the time, they find the place, and they make their prayers. You know, and same thing with the fasting and everything else, that, you know, they are internally motivated. You know, they do have a care and a concern about the religion. You hear it when they speak, and you hear it when they write. You hear it, you know, it's part of their character. So the Islam is the character. That's why the Prophet ﷺ had said that religion, you know, the Islam, the religion of Islam is good character. You know, that is the product that should come out, and that should be clear. Good character in the fullest sense, good character relative to dealing with other human beings, and that's the most obvious to us, as well as good character in terms of how he or she deals with Allah, deals with his religion or her religion.
So now, if you didn't do that from the beginning, you didn't choose a husband, wife, a spouse who was of that best character, or maybe they had good character, Sheikh, but they weren't implementing the injunctions of Islam because they thought to be a good Muslim was something that you maybe just did on Ramadan, or you just did it once in a while. And now,
right.
Now that, as you called it, that time bomb, it the time ran out, and now you're in the midst, and you got kids now, and you're trying to get your daughter and your sons, and you're trying to have the adhan play in the house five times a day, but the Beatles are playing, or 50 Cent.
Right. So you've got a struggle, internal struggle in the family. You know, mom will be defending pop culture, and dad will be saying, well, no, this should be Islamic. You know, we shouldn't have this. And, you know, the struggle, because dad can't, he's out working. He's out most of the time, so he can't enforce, you know, the Islamic situation, the house, in his own absence. So mom's there most of the time with the kids, and she's loose. She's not, you know, she's an okay lady. She's a nice lady, but her deen is in shambles. You know, she's just a ritual. She's just a cultural Muslim. So naturally, then she's going to allow them to listen to this and to do that and to go out. You know, just like recently, I was giving a talk to a bunch of kids growing up who've grown up here, and we were talking about, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, dating, and that kind of thing. One of them said, but what if the parents agree? What if the parents don't object?
Wow.
I said, okay, you know, if you drink alcohol and your parents don't object, what do you think about that? Is that okay?
Not at all.
So, but that's reality, you know. You have parents now who are loose and, you know, it's all right. You know, this is another culture. This is another time. We have to, you know, change with the times and be able to, you know, blend in and function within the society. And that's the norm in the society. You know, my kids are good kids. You know, they're going to keep, you know, they know their limits.
But is it good?
Then Fatima got pregnant.
Fatima got pregnant.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, it's not justified. No matter how you look at it. Is it?
No. No way.
So tell us now some of the other details. What can a person, okay, so picking out a good spouse, someone who's implementing that total and complete submission to the one who created you, Islam, and the one who does it is a Muslim. And from there, when your kids are coming up, you're implementing it, and we have some Muslims who are. They got a big beard. They got the thobe. They got the miswak. But the children, some of them are still not paid attention to, and they think, okay, since I'm doing some of these things, now they overlook some other things, and they might send them to the public school. They might not cut off some of the normal things that are going on around them. And from here, again, they wonder why their children went astray.
Actually, Eddie, before they even reach the school, we got to remember that the first school is the home school. You know, it went from 1 year to 6 years when they're learning at home before they even get into the school.
Yes.
So a lot of your damage is done during this period. Because as, you know, psychologists, child psychologists, etc., have already pointed out, that between the years of ages of 1 to 5, the child's personality, character, traits, etc., are formed. And those traits are difficult to change later on. You're creating, in that early, those early years, you're creating the human being to come. So if you are not careful in those early years to make sure that that child grows up with a consciousness of Allah, then by the time they hit 7, 8, they're into school, everything else, and you then try to, you know, make them do some little Islamic things. You take them here, take them there, so on and so. But those other influences are going to be so great that you're fighting, as they say, an uphill battle. You know, you're not going to win this battle. It's rare. A few manage to get through. A few succeed. But mostly, it's failure. So those first early years, 1 to 5, you know, that's why the Prophet ﷺ had said, teach your children salah by the time they're 7. You know, by the time they're 7, teaching them salah means what? It means not just when you start telling them, okay, there's wudu, you have to stand up, you have to do this. You know, you teach them just the ritual of the prayer. No, by the time they're 7, they're supposed to know that prayer. They should be able to lead the jama'ah. Remember, in the time of the Sahaba, there's, you know, one of the companions, I remember reading about him, he was like 6 years old. He used to lead his whole tribe in salah because he knew the most Quran. 6 years old.
Wow.
And to lead that salah means he has to know, you know, if you break wind, you got to get out of there. You can't, you know, you can't stay there as the imam. You passed wind. No, you know, he knows what to do if he made a mistake. He knows what to do, make sujood sahu, you know, all the different things of the prayer. It's not just the mechanics. That he's not got the Quran, he's got the basic mechanics. No, he needs to know all your basic knowledge that you need to have about the Quran. By the time he was 6 years old, he was doing that. So 7 is like the cutoff point. That should be taken care of. Done. Finished. End of story. You're not even talking about that anymore. Right?
Yes.
So it means for that to happen, you had to have, you know, been doing that from the time the kid is like 3. 2, 3, the kids will get up and start to try to pray beside you and all that. You got to feed that. You got to nurture it. You got to praise it and encourage it and have them make those prayers. Take them to the masjid with you. You know, remind them of Allah. You know, whenever you're explaining things or, you know, you're correcting their behavior, you always try to link it back to Allah. You know, it's because Allah said, you know, this is something which Allah doesn't like. You know, so and so, you're always bringing things back to Allah so that they are growing up with a consciousness. They will always, in their minds, always relate things back to Allah. And that is the foundation that you want to bring and establish before you even talk about putting them into school. And then you have to decide now, which school do we put them into? Well, we're talking about those early years because, as I said, those are the key years which will determine the future of your child.
So, from the ages, you said, of 1 to 5, crucial years?
Immensely crucial. By 7, it's done. The job's done. Should be. Whatever you're going to be faced with later on in life, you've made them in those early years.
So one to five
now. This is why they're telling people, don't put your kids in front of the TV at the age of 1 and 2 and 3 these years. Don't put them there. You know, this is non-Muslims. You know, looking at, you know, what's happening to the children and that, and saying, hey, this television is damaging. You know, it's your surrogate father and mother. You know, hey, we don't need it. Actually, a lot of people in America have taken televisions out of their homes. You know, or at least the thing is, you control it. You know, you put on Islamic programs. You make sure the input that's coming into the house, you got to your television, it's Islamic input. You know, so that's what the kids go and watch. If it's cartoons, it's Islamic cartoons. It's some message. So the point is that the environment that we're going to raise that child in those early years, that environment, we have to ensure that it is as Islamic as possible. As Islamic as we can possibly make it. So in turn, inside of the home, as I said, we have to have a clean home. A home that is really Islamically respectful, reminding the members of the family of Allah. It's not a home where, okay, you know, we put a few verses of the Quran, Ayatul Kursi, whatever, on the wall in nice calligraphy, and we say, okay, we got an Islamic home. But, you know, we got all kinds of magazines, we have all kinds of, you know, television programs, we have radio, we have, you know, music blasting in the background, whatever. So the whole environment is satanic. It's not Islamic, you know. So very important that we have a clean home. And then outside of the home, because kids spend so much time in home and then so much time outside of the home. So it means what? It means that you have to have, especially in this kind of circumstance, you have to have friends who are like-minded. You know, who are the friends, who are your friends, who are your wife's friends, who you go to visit and take your kids with you, and she goes to visit, takes her the kids with her. You know, these should be all people who reinforce, because you don't want to be, you know, building in your home, then you take your kids out and breaking it down in other people's homes. You know, so you have to be very careful about whose homes you put your kids in, you know, who you let your kids play with. You know, it might seem very restrictive. Hey, you know, this is... that should be free, kids should be free to play, and they need in those early years to be free. No. That is a big, big mistake. Because what you are doing is you are creating a monster, you know, Frankenstein, yes, being created there in your own home, who will come back to bite you.
So you have here as some things to do, you said consciousness of the Creator 24/7. That's, we can put it on the things to do list. And a couple of things you mentioned, if we can put it, and for the listeners, they can take notes, things to avoid. You mentioned the TV. Some people have actually taken it out of your house, but if you choose to say keep it, maybe cut off any access to the, would you say, Bart Simpson, South Park, American Idol, MTV, you know, the daytime, nighttime, soap operas. This is a no-no?
Exactly. I'm, the thing is that you have to provide alternatives. Because on one hand, you cut off these things. But then, for example, in the Muslim world today, there's a lot of work has been done in media. So you have a lot of cartoons and things like this, which are Islamic, where there's some Islamic message, moral, being taught in them. So they can watch them, they can enjoy them. Because they're kids, they like, you know, moving pictures and things like this. So we get books and things like this for them, and build their environment that they're going to learn from in the home. We have to, you know, work on not just cutting out things, but also adding things. We have to add many things, because we're trying to counter something which is overwhelming. We have the media monster outside, which is, you know, overwhelming, trying to overwhelm the families. Everybody gets sucked into this thing. So we have to develop alternatives. We can't just, you know, forbid, say no. And, you know, the child just feels deprived. So we have to fill that void for them with what is healthy and you know, is going to help fulfill the kind of goals that we have for our children.
So take out...
And also...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Sheikh.
Yeah, I would say also among the things we have to put in is the Quran. You know, we have to put that Quran in strongly from the time the child reaches around 3 years old, 3.5 years old. They can start to learn the Quran. Most people, they're having their kids learn Quran when they're already, you know, quite big. But technically speaking, you know, I mean, some of my kids already, they were already reading Quran with tajweed at the age of 4, you know. So it's not, they were not super kids or special. No, we just took the trouble to work with them, you know, get them good teachers and so on and so on. And they were already learning from those early ages. So they should be linked up with the Quran, right?
Linked up with the Quran, which is the verbatim word of God, Almighty Allah. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back with Dr. Bilal Phillips here on the Dean Show Radio Show.
He created the universe. To him belong the heavens and the earth. The ever-living, he is the first. He's the owner of mercy. He sent his messengers to warn his creatures of the grave dangers of worshiping other than Allah. There is none greater than the Creator. None greater than the Creator. Allahu Akbar.
You have to pray as if everything depends on Allah, and it does. But you must work as if everything depends on you, and it doesn't. That's my point. You see what I'm saying, man? And I don't like that. I don't like us sitting here. What are you waiting for? What are we waiting for right now? What are we waiting for all these people to come to Islam? What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for right now? When they're going to come? They're going to come. Allah going to bring these people. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put in our hand the ability to do it. Now do your job.
And we are back again on the Dean Show Radio Show. We're taking away, as the Sheikh was talking about, some of the poison and substituting it with some good stuff. How about a few suggestions? What do you, you know, you got Zaki. Have you heard of Zaki?
No.
Zaki, the brothers from down in Australia. Some real good brothers from One Islam.
One Islam, yeah, sure. Yeah,
they have a big purple Zaki, and he teaches the kids how to pray, I think, or Huda TV, Peace TV, maybe even The Dean Show. Mm-hmm. Are these good substitutes?
Sure. You have Adam's World and, you know, all the stuff which was done by Astrolabe from long time ago.
Adam's
the puppets.
World.
Adam, the puppet, you know, which where they did this way back, you know, maybe as much as 15 years ago they started producing them. So Astrolabe has a whole ton of materials which teach the kids how to pray, how to fast. All the different pillars of Islam are there, and it's done through puppets, sort of like Sesame Street style. You know, so
yes,
there's no end of stuff out there that we can gather, and just we have to be conscious. Of course, it's not going to be just dropping in our lap. We have to make a conscious effort to go out and build, you know, a proper library in our home, which the children can, you know, reach out to, whether it's a media library or it's books and magazines and things like this for the kids. We have to build that environment for them, and as I said, link them up with the Quran. And link them up with good friends. You know, as the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had stressed that, you know, the good friend is like the perfume merchant. You know, if you sit with him, either you're going to walk away smelling good because he opened up enough perfume bottles and the scent has reached you, or he's going to give you actually one of those bottles, you know. Whereas the bad friend is like the blacksmith. You know, you hang around with him, you know, either he's going to be beating the iron and the sparks are going to burn your clothes, or at least you're going to go away stinking of smoke, you know. So you have to be very conscious of the friends that you choose for your children. And that is a part of their growing environment.
And anyone who has a sensible mind, who's a sensible person, they don't even have to be one who has consciously submitted to the Creator, but they want the best for their family, and hopefully, God willing, they'll accept the way of the Creator sooner rather than later. But now they see that this is not good for my child if he sees two adults being promiscuous, which a lot of times you'll see in the commercials, you'll see even in the cartoons. Isn't this right? So we're saying something that's logical. This is something that is detrimental to the children.
Absolutely. So those early years, as I said, we have to be particularly careful. The input that we put in there, the environment that we have them in, the contacts that they have outside of the home, we have to be working consciously and conscientiously on all these levels. It's a job. It's a responsibility. And we can't think, okay, we got this weekend school, we just dump the kids off, you know, that'll take care of them. You know, they got the little Islam there, they got a Qari who's teaching Quran and so on and so. But then during the rest of the week, then, you know, their mother, their teacher, their best friend is, you know, the boob tube. So we're fooling ourselves.
The boob tube.
I mean, when they talk about...
The boob tube.
Yeah. The boob tube is television. That's what we used to... In my day, right? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's an outmoded term now, but
nice. I like
the tube. Yeah. But because the thing is that when they show you the amount of violence, I remember reading some statistics, like in the average roadrunner, right? The bleep bleep, the old roadrunner. Yes. I don't know if it's still shown, but they say that the amount of violence that happens in the average roadrunner cartoon far exceeds, you know, you're talking about 5-10 times, you know, the average Terminator Schwarzenegger movie.
So no wonder the kids are acting up and being violent when they're watching some of even the cartoons, which the adults might think are innocent.
Mm-hmm. It's promoting a culture of violence. And you know, you're laughing at it, you know, as the roadrunner smashes, he gets his head smashed in with an anvil. You know, hey, this is not something that's funny. How can you laugh at that?
Yeah.
You know, but people, oh, that's innocent. They don't really mean that. The other thing that you have to be careful of also is even the clothing of the children. Now, one of the common mistakes that people do is that the little kids, when they're growing up, they have them dressed according to standard Western fashion. So the little girls, you know, will be wearing skin tight stuff and their little behind sticking out, and you know, it's aura exposed, you know, 100% top to bottom, you know. I mean, oh, they're only kids, you know. What kid's aura? What do you mean a kid's aura? But hey, you know what? If that child gets used to exposing their aura from early age of childhood, when you want her now, she reaches puberty and okay, now you gotta get on a hijab, hey. Now you got a fight on your hands. You got somebody who has been accustomed to exposing her aura all the way along, and now you can say, cover it all up? Hey, you've got a serious problem here. So that's why these things, I mean, I'm not saying you got to take the little kid and then put everything on them. You know, they're wearing abaya and niqab and, you know, hey, 3 years old. No. I mean, of course, the kids, you might find little girls that may want to do it, right? And of course, you do it. You let them do it. Don't stop them from doing it if they want to do it. But don't push it on them, right? But the point is that the general dress should be loose-fitting, not exposing the aura. Same thing with little boys. They should not be wearing, you know, skin-tight jeans and, you know, this guy. No, no. This is haram. Haram for adults. And it's haram to have them do it from childhood. Because you're creating a mentality that feels no shyness. They feel no sense of modesty. See, because that's what's happening, isn't it? You know? You have a culture of immodesty. We're exposing the aura, as you know. They say if you've got it, flaunt it. You know. So that is the culture. We have to counter that culture. We have to build in the children a sense of modesty. So when they're taking a bath, they don't do it in front of all the other kids. So the other kids are looking at this one's aura and that one's looking at this one's aura, and you know, you think, oh, they're just little kids. You know, no. You start from the earliest age to give them a sense that, hey, no, you should cover yourself, you put on your clothes, you go in the bathroom, you know, so and so. You don't let, you know, your sister, your other brother be looking at you whilst you're doing these things. I mean, once they reach that age where they can do it. I'm not talking about now the baby's on its back, you know, can't even walk. So, okay, no, you got to say aura. Okay, yeah. You know, we're talking practical, you know, what's real. When the child reaches the age where it can put on its own clothes, then they should be putting it on in privacy.
Yes.
You know, not in front of the other children. They should have that sense of shyness. You're building a sense of shyness where, you know, you don't want your private parts exposed.
Tell us now, Sheikh, as far as the children now coming to an age where they need to go to the school, they need to go to an institution where they can learn more from than just being in the house. Tell us.
And let's say, before you even get there, brother, before we say they need to go and learn more than they're learning in the house, I wouldn't want to go there, because if parents are very strong, you know, organized, then they can teach them at home all the way through. We have homeschooling, brother. We have brothers and sisters who are homeschooling their children, saving them from the damage of these schools, teaching them from the home all the way up till they graduate. It's happening.
This is becoming a big thing even with the Christian community.
Yeah, sure, sure. Because they can see the damage that's happening in school. So before we want to say they need more, no. Yeah, they reach the next stage where they should receive more, but that more can be done in the home if one is able. Okay, we have to admit that the most parents are not able to do it because of their own training, their own backgrounds. This can be improved on, so we can have more people properly trained. They have, you know, homeschools where they have all the material ready prepared. You don't even have to really, you know, I mean, if you're a high school graduate, then you can handle these programs. You know, Culvert and these other types of programs where they've worked all the details out for you. You just got to be there with the kid, supervise, let them do their stuff. And you'll find that the kids who study at home will be like 2-3 grades ahead of the kids who are studying in the public school.
Some people have compared it to spiritual suicide, or even flushing a child down the toilet, sending the children to a public school. What do you have to say about this?
Definitely, absolutely. Putting them in that environment is haram. That's what we have to understand. Fundamentally, it is impermissible for a Muslim to put their child into a public school. For fundamentally impermissible. Why? Because it is the right of the child to receive an Islamic education, an Islamized education, meaning in an Islamic environment where the classmates are mostly Muslims. I mean, not to say you can't have non-Muslims around them, could be some non-Muslims in school also, but mostly Muslims, the teachers are Muslims, the administration is Muslim, the school functions according to Muslim principles. It's not a business, you know, it's not a business which we call Muslim school, but it's a truly Muslim school, which may be financially viable because it has fees, etc., etc., to take care of itself, but it is first and foremost a Muslim school. So that's the right of our children, that they are put and raised and trained and taught in Muslim schools.
Now, can you elaborate on this just a little bit more, as far as you said now that it's, we talked about the homeschooling, you have this option, and then you have the Islamic school, but now totally out the public school. Is it because of the principles and morals on one end aren't to the standards, and now this can have an impact Valentine's Day, Halloween, and all the other influences, the mingling of the co-sexes, and boys and girls passing each other love letters at such an early age, and this kind of is acceptable, but according to the Creator's laws, the one who created us, this is not acceptable, and you'll have more of this in that institution? Is that right?
We can say, brother, that education is fundamentally the conveyance of culture, a nation or a people's culture, to the generation which comes after them. That's what we're doing. That's what's happening in the school. Besides all of the other things, this is primarily what is happening, that the teachers are conveying their culture. They're conveying mathematics, science, English, everything else in a cultural package, right? A cultural package which is, for the most part, in clear opposition to Islamic culture. So putting the children in there, as we said, as you said earlier, is in fact spiritual suicide. You are, you know, laying the foundations of the destruction of your children, putting them in public school. But of course, you know, we have to also look at the realities, you know, when we talk about this, realities of how many Muslim schools are there. Yes, there are hundreds and hundreds of them in the U.S. now, you know, and hundreds every year coming up. You know, people are becoming more and more conscious and trying to do it, you know, and, you know, they, after they've seen the damage that has happened with the first early generations that came through. Because I remember we used to look at the immigrants, you know, as a convert Muslim in North America, you know, myself and other friends used to look at immigrants who came, immigrant Muslims who came to North America, and then we would see their kids getting all messed up and everything else, you know, here in North America. We said, look at this, man, you know, these people are really not serious about their deen and this, that, and the other. But then, as we had kids, and our kids grew up now in North America, the same thing was happening. Even though we were conscious and we were trying this and that and the other, they said, wow, you know, this, the only answer is that these children must be in Muslim schools. It is a necessity. I mean, how many generations have been lost? We talk about the figures of how many people are coming into Islam daily, and they estimated somewhere around 400 people a day in the U.S. You know, how many people are leaving Islam daily? Maybe it's 500. You know, so actually, it sounded nice when we said there's 400 coming in every day, but if we got 500 leaving every day, hey, that's not too good at all.
Yes.
So we have to establish more and more Muslim schools, and this requires sacrifice and effort. This is where the parents now gather with other parents and make the necessary financial, you know, and educational sacrifices to get this thing happening. You know, to establish these schools across the country, more and more of them, because there is no other way forward. Without them, there is failure. No, some people say, well, I know so-and-so, he had his kids in the public schools, and they went through, and alhamdulillah, they came back, came out, and they're good Muslims, and they're doing it. Yeah, you know, there are some people, you can find it in the Guinness Book of World Records, who fell out of airplanes, you know, at 40,000 feet, without, and their parachutes didn't open, and they lived to talk about it. But do we build our lives on that happening, that event? No, man. That is like a one in a million, you know?
Yes.
Hey, you don't determine your life based on these massive exceptions. Because that one kid who came through, yeah, they came through okay. They even went to college and came out. Look at them now. They're top, you know, in the community. They're right on it. And okay, let's look at all of the other children who went to school along with this person. What happened to them? Okay, so one survived and 99 didn't. So what's the point of talking about that one? We got to deal with the 99, because that's the reality in front of most of us.
Yes, a few more points that we want to tackle before we come to a close. Very, very important topic that we're discussing. Family planning with Dr. Sheikh Bilal Phillips. Some confusion is out there also, because you have some individuals, is, I call it Sheikh Benda rules. So some people who are in a certain community, they'll have, for instance, the Eid gathering, and then the next day they'll rent out a big, huge hall, and they'll have what's called the cultural folklore, where the men and women, boys and girls, the teens, they come together, and then they're dancing and doing different cultural dances. And the parents are also getting together, and they got the band. So the normal person is looking and saying, well, the imam is here, and the kids are together and dancing, and the music is playing. This is an Eid party right after Eid. And then back in the outside of the hall, the kids are, and the boys and girls are intermingling, exchanging phone numbers. And this is all under the flag of Islam. It's Eid, brother, the day after. And the imams are there. It's confusing now.
Absolutely. I mean, it is no harm in terms of Eid gatherings. And of course, we are encouraged to gather and enjoy the Eid. And families should feel that you know, sense of togetherness on Eid, everything else. But it's got to be according to the rules. I mean, it's not just a free-for-all and, you know, according to what we did back home and, you know, how our culture used to be. And our cultures, most of our cultures are, you know, very un-Islamic. So, I mean, what happens is that people, when they get together, well, then, okay, all the males get together. You know, I mean, the families may come to a location together, but then they separate once they get there. The females go off and they mingle and they, whatever, they do their thing, you know, within the bounds of Islam again, you know, but it's done in a separate fashion because that's the way that Islam prescribes. And that is for the protection, you know, of the modesty and the character of the Muslim youth as well as the adults, you know, growing up in this kind of a society. So, I mean, you definitely need to deal with the bigger kids now because you're moving up into the age where they're into dating and all these other kinds of things. I mean, you have to start finding a proper spouse for your children. You know, you have to have this clear to them in mind that, hey, you know, we will, when the time is ready, we will be there to help you. Because, of course, a lot of times parents neglect this when the children reach the age where they're starting to think, well, you know, maybe I'd like to get married or whatever, this, that, and the other, you know, that we should be there to help them, you know, and not force it down their throats later on down the line, you know, where it's a matter of cousins and close relatives, etc. You got to marry in the family, in the tribe, in the clan, whatever. No, I mean, we have to follow Islamic principles. As we had to be careful about choosing the proper spouses for ourselves, you know, we should also help them make the right choices when they get up into that age range. And of course, the community must have, you know, recreational facilities for the youths as they're growing up. Because if you don't have, you know, a place where they can play basketball or whatever, you know, you don't have regular programs taking them out to the parks or whatever, then they're going to try and find those recreational, you know, fulfill their recreational type desires through the common channels that are available in the society. And these channels are surrounded with drugs and you know, corrupt music, and all of the evils are there, you know, in the disguise of entertainment. So we have to provide and entertaining and help those kids develop entertaining, you know, environments for themselves as they're growing up, you know, which are wholesome and Islamic. And at the same time, you know, fulfilling their needs to enjoy and to recreate and these type of things.
So, such a vast topic, and we're just trying to give some advice so that people can go further and dwell into this deeper. We have a couple more points. We got to get in there. Tell us, as far as the individual, this individual that now he's listening to this says, you know what? I should have did that. I could have did that. You know what? It's happened. The past is the past. But now, what can he do? Is it too late? The son is in the gang. The daughter's not in the proper modesty dress according to how the Creator and the children aren't praying and et cetera, et cetera. The list is too long to list. Does the father just give up? What can he do now?
Well, you know, of course, you say, you know, you got to cut your losses. Definitely the little ones that are still going up, you know, you got to try to catch, you know, the mistakes that you made before, correct them up, try to minimize the damage and to help these kids, you know, find their way. Try to save what you can. What has gone before, then you have to try to reach out. Of course, you have to take a different approach. You can't just say, well, okay, now you've realized you made all these mistakes. You can't just sort of say, I'm going to lay down the law now. You just better stick by this thing. No, you're going to have a rebellion on your hands. You're going to have a revolt in the house. You know, so you obviously have to deal with this thing with hikmah, with wisdom. You know, you have to think things out, maybe get counselors or people whose counseling skills, you know, get them around some elders or people who are of their own peer group who are, you know, Islamically oriented and who are active, you know, that they can, you can help them, help the older ones find healthy alternatives to whatever they're currently into.
These are the healthy alternatives you were saying now to bring out other people who are also implementing the deen. Hopefully this can have a good influence.
Other families, linking up with those families, you know, looking at what you're doing, look at your relationships, you know, try to minimize the negative ones and try to maximize the positive ones. Go out of your way to try to make connections with people who have successful families, and then try to help or get some of the benefits from that into your family. And of course, as an individual, then you have to look at your own deen and how you've been tackling it. You have to try to get your wife in line, or wife, you need to get the husband in line. Try to get people back on the deen properly, because of course your main example is going to be the home. How you are, how you were, all of these have the influence on the children today, and what's going to happen for them tomorrow. So you have to make changes also. It's not just about tackling them and saying, well, okay, they need to do this, they need to do that. But no, you have to be a better example. You have to try to get your house in order. So, and you have to do it, as I said, now you have to do it in a wise way. You can't do it the way you could have if you had laid the foundation. You don't have the foundation now. You're trying to put a foundation in place, and you have to do it in a very gradual and understanding. And you have to keep in mind, it's your fault. They're like this because it's your fault. I mean, I remember one of the students coming to me. So I was teaching in Dubai, in the American University in Dubai. And there, one of the female students would tell me, listen, my father had told me, when he put me in the university, that he trusts me, right? But I've fallen in love with, one of the boys in my class. What should I do? Hey, look at this. The father, who had been, putting this girl through, segregated education all along, and then now time comes for university studies, and he goes and he puts her in a mixed university, the American University in Dubai, which is, the most corrupt of the universities. He puts her in there and he tells her, I trust you.
Wow.
Yay. What are you doing, man? What do you mean you trust her? She's a human being. No matter what you've taught her, everything else, you put her in that environment, which is going to draw her into, suck her into this stuff, and then you're going to say, I trust you. Trust you meaning I trust you not to develop any boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. You're not going to fall in love with anybody. You're just going to go in there and do your studies, keep your mind focused on this one thing and come out. Hey, that is so foolish. That is so foolish. And, so many families have been destroyed in this kind of so-called trust. We don't call this tawakkul. We call this tawakkul, where you throw the person in, without any means to protect themselves, and say, I trust Allah will take care of you, and you will do the right thing.
So we have to, is that right, Sheikh? We have to do everything in our power to do everything how the Creator wants us to do it, and then we put trust in Him? Is that what it is, to trust Allah? Or some people?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. As they say, you got to tie that camel.
Tie the camel.
Tie the camel.
Put the alarm in the car?
Definitely.
Last point we want to cover. Last one. It's very important now. You had mentioned it. Self-diagnosis. An individual, should he be doing a self-diagnosis, checking his salat? Is he praying it in the times? Or maybe he's combining it like they used to do in back home culture. They'll pray it all in the morning, pray it at night. Same thing with the pilgrimage, making tawaf in the mall or to back home, but Allah called the individual 1400 years ago to come to his house to go to Hajj, but the individual now is 50. He's still been implementing deen, but she still hasn't gone to Hajj. Little details like this, indulging in usury, interest, and the list goes on. Self-diagnosis, can this also be bringing the anger of the Creator of the heavens and earth, because we're not obeying Him? We fear more the people and what they'll say instead of fearing the Creator.
Definitely. We can't move ahead if we haven't understood what's the problem and where the problem lies. The problem lies fundamentally with us. That's what we can't escape. It's easy to blame it on others, blame it on the kids, blame it on the environment, blame it on all the other things. But the bottom line is that the real and major blame comes back to us, first and foremost. We have to be conscious of where we've gone astray, where we have made our mistakes, you know, and in that way, if we've understood, then we can make a change. If we haven't understood where our mistakes lie, then we are doomed to repeat our mistakes. That's the bottom line. I mean, that's common sense. So it is definitely necessary for us to stop and look at our situations now, what we're doing, what has become cultural norms for us and things like this, or things we've brought from the old country or whatever, put them on the scale of Islam. Because if we're talking about Islam here, you know, establishing Islam in our families, you know, planning for the hereafter, meaning that our focus is the hereafter. And this comes up, you know, when you talk about education, you know, put the kids in the school, put them in the university, so on and so. You know, you have to think. You know, you're putting them in university, I mean, even in the university experience. Now, people go to university just for the experience of university. What does that mean? It means party. You know, you get out there and you party.
Yes.
Right? The university experience is a party experience. You're free from the bounds of the family now. You're on your own. You can do what you want to do. You know, that's the university. So, hey, before you go and put your son or your daughter in that, you've got to make sure that they got their heads on right. You know, if their heads are, you know, spun around and they're messed up, that's just going to make them more messed up. And when they go into university, if their heads aren't right, then they have to choose subjects which are appropriate for them as Muslims. It's not just take any profession to do anything, to be anything. You know, we can be anything, you know. No, as Muslims, we can't be anything. You have to think about what professions you're going into. How is this profession going to benefit the Muslim community? You know, it's not just about you making money. Yeah, this job or this profession gives me lots of money. But no, you have to think, does the community need this? Will I be able to serve my community and help that community from this? Or am I going to be isolated from my community, off in another world altogether? So these are things and considerations that one has to take into mind carefully. You know, women going into university, you know, what are they going in for? What professions are they going into? Is it just the university experience? Beware. Better they stay home. Better they stay home than just go there for the experience. That experience is an evil experience. So therefore, you know, if you're going to put your girl into university, for one, you have to make sure that she's down on the deen. She knows the religion. She is clear. She's focused. You know, she's practicing. Okay, then, what profession are you going to put her in? Okay, the Muslim community needs this profession. They need female dentists. They need female gynecologists. They need female teachers. So whatever field she's going into, it's a field which is needed for women. Women need to be trained and professionals in these fields. So, you know, you think. It's not just about the next phase of life, which is the university experience.
Last closing comments and suggestions, not only to those who have consciously made a decision to submit to the one God alone without any co-equals, co-partners, worshiping Him on His terms, doing things how He wants them to do it. This is a Muslim living Islam in totality, working for the next life, paradise, and avoiding the ramifications of following your lusts and desires, which produces the hellfire. Tell us, also for humanity that has been listening, and they say, man, these people are adhering to a strict moral code, and their logic is telling them, man, if I implement this, I'm just going to be a better person. So give us advice for those Muslims and also for humanity in general. Closing comments and suggestions, Sheikh, please.
Well, because of the fact that we're talking about, you know, raising children in North America, you know, raising good, righteous, trustworthy, you know, upstanding citizens. You know, for us, of course, it's Muslims first. which brings out all of these other qualities anyway. It means that, you know, as we said in the very beginning, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So we do have to plan this whole process out carefully. We need to read, we need to learn, we need to sit in classes, you know, hear from child psychologists, you know, expose ourselves to as much information as is possible to do this job correctly, to do it properly. We owe it to our children. we owe it to them to give them the best start in life. And that begins, as we said, all the way down to the first year and all the way up to the last year. We have that duty, you know, as an obligation on us all the way through. So we need to equip ourselves with this sufficient knowledge to do this job properly. And we need to be conscious of the Creator in order to give that consciousness to our children so that they will grow up with a moral foundation which is firm, which will carry them through the tests and the difficulties of this life. That moral foundation is what is of most importance. And of course, that foundation is not just morality with regards to other human beings, which is, of course, of utmost importance, but first and foremost, it is that morality with regards to God. No doubt, it is good, it is right, it is proper that we worship God alone, one God. And it is improper, it is incorrect, it is wrong to worship God's creation, his creatures. It is incorrect to conceive of God as a part and parcel of his creation. He is not. He is the Creator. So we have to have our spiritual being and our life and our existence in proper moral tune with the Creator. We have to work on that as we have to work on that situation for our families, our children, our wives, husbands, etc. You know, this is, it's all about a moral battle for the spirits, the souls of the generation and the generations to come.
Thank you very much. May the Creator of the heavens and the earth, the Creator who created this whole universe and everything in it, in Arabic we say Allah, may he reward you in abundance for taking the time out to be with us here on the Deen Soul Radio Show.
Ameen.
We look forward to having you back again.
It was my pleasure, as usual.
Thank you very much.
Barakallahu feekum.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Wa alaikum salam.
Fresh, pure, holy peace. Fresh, pure, holy peace.